From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. The division that led the U.S. Army's invasion of Iraq last year is getting ready to go back. The reorganized 3rd Infantry Division faces a different kind of fight than the one it faced when it surged into Baghdad and toppled Saddam Hussein's government. A resilient and in some areas expanding Iraqi insurgency has altered the way the division trains for war.
NPR's Eric Westervelt was with the 3rd ID during last year's invasion. He recently caught up with the division's 4th Brigade at a training center in rural Louisiana.
It's 3:30 in the morning, 9 hours into the attack on the insurgent stronghold of Sadiq. Army Sniper Specialist Donald Sear and his spotter fight off fatigue and guerrillas. Sear crouches in the brush, scanning a series of packed-together buildings. Despite night vision gear and a high-tech scope, it's still tough to see. Sear has a bead on an insurgent. Well, on someone.
Hey, sir.
Yeah, what you got?
The guy with a flashlight. The good guys or bad guys?
Sear's platoon leader barks in the distance. Make damn sure you know what you're shooting at, Sear.
Well, that's why I'm not shooting, sir, because I just want to make sure that...
At times, Lieutenant Joel Damon, the platoon leader for Alpha Company, 3-7 Infantry, sounds a little like an agitated parent of unruly children as his men take up fighting positions near an urban complex. At this moment, Lieutenant Damon seems glad that the insurgents today are fellow American soldiers, that casualties are just laser tag beeps, and that Sadiq is a fiction set deep in the muddy woods of Louisiana's Joint Readiness Training Center. And Lieutenant Damon's glad that the young sergeant's sniper rifle fires only blanks.
Don't shoot.
Whoa. Hey, what the f*** you guys shooting at?
The guy with flashlight out there.
Yeah.
All right, we've got friendly. Make sure you know what shooting at.
There's friendlies in there.
Attack helicopters swoop overhead. Abrams tanks and Bradley fighting vehicles rumble as the assault on Sadiq heats up. Red muzzle flashes crackle and smoke rises from the woodline and nearby windows. Soon, one Alpha Company soldier's casualty alarm goes off.
Sergeant Beasley! Sergeant Beasley! Who is it?
Who's hey!
It's Sergeant Mina!
What's his wound?
I don't know yet!
The casualty card in Sergeant Nina's jacket shows he suffered a fatal wound.
Foreign fighters, 3-7 Infantry are the finest trained and best equipped soldiers in the world. Surrender now, or you will die.
Roughly half of the soldiers in the 3rd Infantry Division today are veterans of last year's U.S.-led Iraq invasion. But whether combat tested or fresh out of basic training or officer school, soldiers know they now face a long, complex counterinsurgency fight. Not the heavy armor rush to topple a dictator.
The division has a rich heritage, and when it comes to the dirty business of war fighting, where you have to kill people and break things, the division has been very good at that. But we're fighting a different kind of war here.
Lieutenant Colonel David Funk is battalion commander of the 3rd Infantry Division's 3-7 Infantry.
Throughout history, they've been called insurgencies. They've been called dirty little wars. There's a lot of different names for them. But the bottom line is it's a type of warfare that traditionally we don't prepare for, train for, and practice for.
But that has changed. Pentagon officials say it's doubtful the U.S. will significantly boost troop levels in Iraq to put down the resistance. Instead, military leaders are expected to continue the strategy of slogging it out with insurgents and hotspots while helping feed reconstruction projects and building up the still struggling Iraqi security forces. So armored fighters, like the Army's 3rd Infantry Division, have had to adopt new tactics and techniques. At this Louisiana training base, traditional maneuvers are matched with a wide range of possible Iraq scenarios aimed at building soldiers' skills with counterinsurgency, something the Army moved away from in instruction and doctrine after the Vietnam War.
Three Iraqi civilians gain access to the camp without being properly searched. We're trying to ascertain what is their purpose for being on the camp.
Here at Fort Polk's fictional Sadiq, there are car and roadside bomb attacks and guerrilla ambushes. Hundreds of local Louisiana civilians and dozens of Arabic-speaking Iraqis hired by the military play the roles of translators, insurgents, tribal leaders, and civilians on the battlefield. This day, a young Army lieutenant, very new to interrogation, questions a suspected insurgent.
Do you know the police chief or the sheikh?
I met the police chief once.
How long have the insurgents been in Sadiq?
Well,
have no idea.
Commanders agree counterinsurgency is often a fragile mix of trust-building and raw combat power. There's another key ingredient, which the U.S. has struggled with mightily in Iraq since Saddam's fall, solid, reliable intelligence, human intelligence on how, where, and when insurgents operate, how they're organized, funded, and what motivates the local populace. Lieutenant Colonel Funk.
We have satellites that can read a license plate from 2 miles in the sky. And that's perfectly acceptable if you're attacked by a license plate. Unfortunately, we were attacked by humans, and the best way to counter that is with human intelligence. And so what we have done is become very attuned to the need to have patience, to listen to what the people say, and understand that there is very little information on the battlefield that is idle information. It almost always means something. You just have to connect the dots, if you will, to find out what it means.
Deciphering what it means depends on everyone, Colonel Funk says, from truck-driving corporals to company captains, absorbing and passing on strands of information for analysis. Battalion Executive Officer Major David Priaco calls counterinsurgency a blend of training and instinct, combat and social work, where one small mistake by a corporal, Priaco says, can have big strategic implications.
The slightest wrong move can offset all the work that we've done, and we're experiencing that out here. If a soldier accidentally gets into a building, didn't realize it was a mosque, well, suddenly there's going to be some backlash from that, and so now we have to go back and determine how we're going to try to set things straight with the local population.
The different training challenges and the changed conditions in Iraq have also changed the way some soldiers view the aims and goals of the Iraq mission.
I tell everyone at home that, you know, this is what I signed up for, and I'm only 20 years old, and it'll be my second time going over there.
Private First Class Charles Adams from Fair Haven, Vermont, drives a Humvee in 3-7 Scout Platoon. That's a job similar to the one he did during the invasion of Iraq.
You know, that's where the terrorists are right now, and we're going to go in there and try to control them a little bit.
Do you see it as a central part in the war on terrorism, or is it a different kind of fight?
It's a war on terrorism. Whether the terrorism was there prior to our going in last year, that may not be. But it is now definitely a war on terrorism.
Staff Sergeant Jamie Neely was in 3-7 Infantry in Iraq last year. He looks at a return to the heat, sand, and fight as a noble challenge.
The insurgency does make me a little upset that it could be some of the people that we're trying to free that is shooting at us. If they would just understand that we're there to help them as much as possible.
Other 20-something soldiers in 3-7, especially some facing their first combat tour in Iraq, wonder whether the Iraq War is worth the strain on families and on the stretched thin U.S. Army. Private First Class Dwayne Adger wonders whether it's worth risking his life.
A lot of soldiers are dying for reasons that they don't even know, you know. I mean, I understand that we are soldiers and we're supposed to help and defend and all this, but at least can we know about what we're defending, you know what I'm saying, what we're trying to do.
PFC Adger says he joined the Army to help find direction and discipline. Dressed in full battle gear, the 21-year-old from Richmond, Virginia, sweats in the late autumn Louisiana heat. He's in a wooden guard tower, clutching his M16 and scanning the tree line for movement. Adger says he's ready to move on from training exercises like this one to real combat in Iraq, and he believes his combat buddies will help him get through it all. But Adger seems burdened with doubt, questioning the why of U.S. involvement in Iraq.
They say they were looking for weapons of mass destruction, never found any. Then they say they're fighting terrorism. Well, the 9/11 incident came from Bin Laden in Afghanistan, so why are we in Iraq? It's like we invaded their country. They're not just going to put their hands down and be like, all right, take over our country. Of course they're going to fight back. You know what I'm saying? That's anybody. But I don't know. I'm confused about the whole situation.
Adger and another soldier on guard duty, Specialist Courtney Dixon, are both fuelers. Delivering this vital supply is also one of the most dangerous jobs in Iraq. Specialist Dixon cups his M16 affectionately, calling the rifle his best friend. I've got to be a fuel driver and an infantryman at the same time, Dixon says, noting that convoys in Iraq come under daily attack.
That's the scary part. But hey, it got to be done. So I'm willing to go in there and do it. At least you're only going to get that out of me one time. Okay, go back again. Because that's just not me. That's just not the type. Some people love this, and I don't.
Dixon says when his time in the Army's up, he'll leave the military. Army recruiters hope that doesn't become a broad trend, and so far, it hasn't. Despite a widely expected second combat tour scheduled for Iraq, the 3rd Infantry Division has exceeded its reenlistment rate for this fiscal year. and after a second tour, they hope to retain experienced soldiers, like 20-year-old Private First Class Stephen Saunders.
Brought to you courtesy of my red, white, and blue.
A sergeant nearby grimaces and plugs his ears at the attempted harmony as PFC Saunders and some friends sit atop an armored Humvee as the unofficial songsters of 3-7 Scout Platoon.
Bid farewell to old Kentucky.
Saunders was part of an infantry line company during the invasion last year, Operation Iraqi Freedom, known as OIF-1. Now set for OIF rotation number 3, he's part of a sniper team. New experiences, he says, new people.
I plan on re-enlisting, so I'll probably go to OF-5, OIF-7.
Saunders says the first time in Iraq, at least, he had a better sense of just who the bad guys were. Now you don't know who your enemy is, he says. My mother could handle me in Iraq once, adding, I'm not sure how she's going to handle a second long tour.
My girlfriend's not happy, of course. I'm going to be gone for a year. That's a big thing between a relationship.
Do you think it's going to survive 12 months away?
Right now, me and my girlfriend are going through a certain situation that I'm hoping the relationship lasts because she's pregnant, and I'm hoping we move the relationship to the next step where we're at least engaged. But you know, if we decide that's what we want to do, that's what we're going to do, and the Army will support that, and I'll be able to come back and see my child get born, which would be really cool.
Is she ready to get engaged?
Yeah. I think she is, but you know, she understands the fact that I leave all the time because that's just what you get when you join the Army.
Sergeant Zimmerman. All right, take your guys back out around the back. Set them up in the wood lines where they can suppress objective white.
Hey, sniper, try to get on the roof here.
The assault on the mythical town of Sadiq was largely a success, although some units took heavy casualties. 4th Brigade commanders are now reviewing the lessons from their training time at Fort Polk. One company captain said his soldiers learned a whole lot during the exercise. Then, looking at the insurgency in Iraq, added, we also know there'll be some on-the-job training when we get there. Soldiers with the Georgia-based 3rd Infantry Division hope to get the holidays at home before deploying to Iraq for 12 months or longer early next year. Eric Westervelt, NPR News.
And we'll be following the 3rd ID at home and in Iraq through the coming year. You can hear previous stories about the division at npr.org.